All right, so welcome everyone. Today we have Mark Schiffer from Heidelberg University, and he's going to tell us about the challenges of asymptotically safe quantum gravity. So let Mark take it away, please.
Yeah, thank you very much, Daniele, for the introduction, and thank you also all for the invitation to present my work here. I'm very happy for the opportunity to give a talk. And as Daniele said, I'm going to talk about challenges of asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And one key challenge, in my opinion, in the broader context of quantum gravity is that in the end, we want to derive phenomenology from our theory of quantum gravity. And we want to at least reproduce or even explain and predict things that we can observe at low energies, and therefore provide a fundamental and predictive description of nature as we experience it. And in a sense, one can think about it as having two islands, one the phenomenology island where one can perform experiments and test models, and on the other hand, the theory island. And when we strive towards a fundamental description of nature, we usually start out on this theory island, and in the end, we would like to test our models and check for consistency and investigate whether we can actually perform or provide predictions from the theory onto the phenomenology island. And in order to do that, we have to build a bridge. And as we know, any bridge needs a strong foundation. And therefore, the first key challenge that I will address are theory foundations for quantum gravity. And if we zoom a little bit closer on the theory island, we see that there's different models or different approaches to quantum gravity that explore different areas and different aspects of the bigger theory island. And in the talk, I'm mainly going to focus about asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And here, the key challenges that I will highlight or that I will discuss is the question about convergence, about background independence, and I will also briefly mention unitarity in asymptotically safe quantum gravity. So the idea of we think about quantum gravity, the idea is that we take a patch of space-time and we zoom into that patch of space-time until at some point we see rather mild quantum fluctuations of space-time, and then we zoom further in, these fluctuations become stronger. And if we now attempted to quantize gravity in the standard way, so in a perturbative way, then we would realize that by zooming in further and further, we would have to introduce more and more free parameters. And therefore, at some point, we would lose predictivity. Now, the key idea, the concept of asymptotic safety is that at high energies, we realize scale symmetry. And therefore, by zooming in further into a patch of space-time, actually the picture doesn't change, but it just looks the same. And scale symmetry is nothing unusual or nothing which is just happening in, or which could just happen in gravity. For example, the strong gauge coupling is asymptotically free, and this means that quantum fluctuations vanish asymptotically, such that, in a sense, at high energies, a classical realization of scale symmetry is approached. And on the other hand, in the case of gravity, we have a balancing of quantum fluctuations, and therefore therefore scale symmetry is realized on a quantum level, such that asymptotic safety is depicted here, where scale symmetry encoded as zero of the scale dependence of the coupling is realized at a finite value of a coupling. So scale symmetry or asymptotic safety as a quantum realization of scale symmetry, as any realization of symmetries imposes conditions on the theory. And in the case of asymptotic safety, the conditions are on relations between different couplings that parameterize the theory space. And here in this plot, we show a simple example of two beta functions, two scale dependencies of couplings. And on the x and y axis, we show their value respectively. and we show, oh, I show the flow in a certain region in the parameter space, and we have three fixed points of this flow, and the arrows point or indicate the flow towards the infrared. And we can see that the fixed point here at sitting at the triangle, or indicated by the triangle, has one infrared attractive and one infrared repulsive direction. And if we start, if we happen to be very close to this fixed point, and we would flow towards the infrared, then we would just need one measurement. So we would just have to measure once to decide whether we have departed, whether we were close to the fixed point to the left or to the right, and all the information about which value of y is realized in this simple example is given automatically by the value of g. So this, in the sense, a relevant direction requires a measurement, and an irrelevant direction is a prediction of the theory. Now, the tool that is commonly used in asymptotically safe quantum gravity is the functional renormalization group. And I will not explain this tool in much detail. I just want to highlight that it's based on the so-called Wetterich equation, which is a functional differential, integral differential equation for the scale-dependent effective action. And the key ingredient is the insertion of an infrared regulator and its scale dependence, which acts as a UV cutoff and therefore ensures UV and infrared finiteness and implements the Wilsonian idea of integrating out quantum fluctuations according to the momentum shell. And one can think about this scale-dependent effective action as interpolating between the classical action when no quantum fluctuations are integrated out and the full 1pi effective action when all quantum fluctuations are integrated out. And from this equation, from the flow of gamma k, one can in principle extract beta functions via projections on tensor structures. However, practical computations require that one truncates the infinite dimensional effective action gamma k, and therefore one introduces systematic uncertainties because the equation, the flow equation, is not closed anymore. An additional technical point is that due to the formulation as integrating out momentum shells, it's a Euclidean formulation, and therefore when we in the following I will when I will talk about quantum gravity, I will always refer to Euclidean quantum gravity. While there's also attempts towards, or there's also work on Lorentzian formulations of the flow equation. And now, instead of going through a long list of results or indications for the asymptotically safe fixed point that has been obtained in different truncations, I would just like to highlight a very specific and, in my opinion, very important feature of the asymptotically safe fixed point, namely that I explored indications for the near perturbative nature of the fixed point. And I explored this from three different points of view, one of them being symmetry identities, then the suppression of a small impact of non-minimal couplings, and finally, in terms of a so-called weak gravity bound. And before going into detail into these three indications for the near perturbative nature, let me just highlight the implication that a potential near perturbative nature of the asymptotically safe fixed point has. And of course, it ensures, or it provides predictivity, because it means that higher order canonically irrelevant operators will not be shifted towards relevance. And therefore, it also provides a very powerful guiding principle to set up approximations and truncations that allow us to characterize the relevant dynamics of a system. And finally, if we would like to make connections to perturbative methods, which would be a very nice indication for the existence of the fixed point, then a near perturbative nature of the asymptotically safe fixed point is some kind of prerequisite. And So let me now start with, yes?
Is it related to any of those three indications that if you couple to N matter fields, fermions or bosons, you can find the fixed point perturbatively in 1 over N, where N is the number of bosons or fermions?
So I think it's a slightly different notion of perturbative control, because I think in the systems that you refer to, one actually has, in these rescaled Toft couplings, one has really a perturbative control with a small expansion parameter, where in the limit n to infinity, one really has the perturbative fixed point. While in the system that I'm describing, we first only find indications for convergent results, and we did not yet identify such a parameter that would allow us to actually prove a perturbative fixed point.
Right. Okay. Well, let's come back and discuss that.
Okay, great. So let me now start with the first indication for the near-perturbative nature of the fixed point, namely discussing symmetry identities. And for this, let's recall the concept of universality in quantum field theory. And for example, in QCD, the strong gauge coupling is dimensionless, and therefore one has the feature of one-loop universality. And this means that if one extracts the scale dependence of a strong gauge coupling at one loop, it doesn't matter whether I extract it from the 4 gluon vertex, the 3 gluon vertex, or the quark gluon vertex. And therefore, in the perturbative regime, where a one loop approximation is sufficient, one can talk about one gauge coupling. And here in this plot, I show on the x-axis the momenta, and on the y-axis, the value of the running couplings or the running vertex correlation functions. And these different lines show the flow of the three different vertex correlation functions that one has in QCD. And we see that at high energies, which is the perturbative limit in QCD, all of these vertex correlation functions agree because a one loop description is sufficient. But if we go to lower energies, which is towards the non-perturbative limit of QCD, then these vertex correlation functions start to deviate, and at some point differ by several orders of magnitude and even by sign. Now, on the other hand, in gravity, the canonical dimension of a Newton coupling is -2, and therefore there's no notion of universality at all. And instead, the gauge symmetry that in a sense relates these different vertex correlation functions is encoded in relations for the vertex flows and the so-called Sloffenhoff-Taylor or modified Sloffenhoff-Taylor identities. And the question in quantum gravity is whether a similar picture whether a similar picture where one has a more or less also a near perturbative regime of quantum gravity, where different vertex correlation functions agree in a at least semi-quantitative way. And to investigate this, I focused on a general gravity metasystem, where we have the Einstein-Hilbert action for the gravitational dynamics, and then of course we also have Fadeev-Popov ghosts for the gravity sector. Then we minimally couple scalar fields, fermions, and also gauge fields. And all of these kinetic terms give rise to different vertex correlation functions, just as in the case of QCD that I have shown before. And now we define the concept of effective universality in contrast to exact one-loop universality as the semi-quantitative agreement of the beta functions of these different vertex correlation functions. And the main result is shown here in this plot, where on the x and y axis, I show the value of lambda 2 and lambda 3, which are related to the 2 and 3-point function of a cosmological, of a dimensionless cosmological constant. And these different lines indicate the lines where a pair of beta functions agrees exactly. So we perform a pairwise comparison of beta functions, and these lines indicate where the difference of beta functions is zero in the gravitational parameter space. And the first non-trivial result is that actually all of the different lines that could exist do exist, and that they fall into a rather small region in the gravitational parameter space. And furthermore, we see that here in this region, they tend to cross, which means that different vertex correlation functions agree in a very confined region of the gravitational parameter space, which one could interpret as having a region in the parameter space that is kind of preferred by symmetry, because it's a near perturbative regime where diffeomorphism invariance is only very slightly broken by gauge fixing regulator and the regulator. And it, even more striking result is that the UV fixed point in the system that I find is exactly here in this region and very close to the crossing of several of these epsilon equals zero lines. And therefore, I interpret this as the fact that the UV fixed point of the asymptotically safe gravity matter system lies in a symmetry preferred regime, which I interpret as the hint for a near perturbative nature of the asymptotically safe fixed point. So the second indication for a near perturbative nature of the fixed point, I said that it was coming from non-minimal couplings. And in general, at the UV fixed point, any coupling which respects the symmetries of a system, which in our case will be diffeomorphism invariance and chiral symmetry, will be present. So it will have a non-vanishing fixed point value. And then I explicitly studied the fermionic non-minimal coupling sigma, which is given by this, or which is related to this tensor structure. And by a numerical evaluation of a momentum dependence of the correlation function, I found indications that the asymptotically safe fixed point of the fermion meta system persists under the inclusion of the non-minimal coupling sigma. And here I show the value, the fixed point values of all the couplings in the system as a function of the fermion number. And this vertical line here indicates the fermion number of the standard model, and indicates that we can accommodate the standard model fermionic matter content even under the inclusion of a non-minimal coupling. And specifically, we also see, as indicated here by this yellowish-orange line, that the value of the fixed point value of a non-minimal coupling actually remains rather small. And this is already an indication that the impact of a non-minimal coupling on the minimally coupled fermionic system is rather small. And another indication for this small impact I found by investigating the momentum dependence of the graviton fermion vertex, a three-point vertex, for the first time, and with the non-minimal coupling indicated here as the red line, and also without the non-minimal coupling indicated here as the green line. And here, this is plotted as a function of the external momentum, or of the external momentum. And we just see by eye that there's a qualitative agreement between these two lines, indicating that indeed the impact of a non-minimal coupling sigma on the momentum dependence of a gravity matter three-point function, which is generated by the RG flow, is rather small. And in summary, I interpret this as indications for the convergence, in the sense that including a higher order irrelevant coupling, or canonically irrelevant coupling, the system containing the relevant couplings does not change by a lot. And with this, let's move on to the third indication for the near perturbative nature of a fixed point, and this comes from the this is related to the so-called weak gravity bound, and in this in the same way as the argument for non-minimal gravity meta couplings at the UV fixed point, there will also be meta self interactions present that if they respect the symmetries of a system. And for the example of an abelian gauge field, there will be a four photon vertex related to the coupling W2, and this four photon vertex will be induced by such a graviton loop diagram. And the scale dependence of this four photon vertex is schematically given here, where the presence of this coefficient B0 comes or relies on the fact that such graviton loop diagrams are present. And if we now turn off gravity for a while, and here in this plot I show the value of a beta function as a function of the coupling W2. And in the case of turning off gravity, then these kind of graviton loop diagrams will not contribute because there's just no gravitational interaction. And therefore this W2 independent coefficient vanishes and we just have a parabola that automatically has a Gaussian fixed point. Now, if we turn on gravity to a finite but small value, the free fixed point is shifted away and becomes an interacting fixed point. And if we continue increasing the gravitational strength further and further, it can happen that we push the parabola up such that the fixed points vanish into the complex plane and the system becomes UV incomplete because the coupling W2 doesn't have any real fixed point anymore. And in the gravitational parameter space spanned by the dimensionless versions of the cosmological constant and the Newton coupling, this the region where one induces this fixed point collision, or where one does not have a fixed point for the four photon interaction W2, is indicated as this red hatched region, which is therefore UV incomplete. And therefore, in order to allow for a UV complete gravity meta system, the asymptotically safe fixed point value has to lie within this white region, where then asymptotic safety for gravity and the higher order meta interaction would be realized. And this line or this boundary between these two regions was called the weak gravity bound. And it actually is a hint that the near perturbative nature of quantum gravity might be necessary, because only within this white weak gravity regime, one can have a UV complete, or one can achieve a UV completion for the induced meta interactions. So let's briefly summarize these indications for the near perturbative nature of a fixed point that I've explored. And those relied on the analysis of symmetry identities between different vertex correlation functions. And in analogy to QCD, we found indications that the UV fixed point of the asymptotically safe gravity meta system lies in a regime where all different vertex correlation functions of gravity and of the minimally coupled gravity meta system are in semi-quantitative agreement, therefore indicating a near perturbative realization of the fixed point. Then the second point was the small impact of the non-minimal fermion gravity coupling sigma. And the third one was the result of the requirement of having a near perturbative realization of quantum gravity, because otherwise the meta sector will most likely be UV incomplete. And the implications, once again, are that it provides indications that asymptotically safe quantum gravity might actually be predictive, because adding canonically irrelevant operators and also operators like non-minimal operators do not add new free parameters into the system. And this provides us with a suitable guiding principle to set up truncations and approximations that capture the relevant dynamics. And in addition to these direct implications, the findings that I've presented here and that I've explored actually put previous results that made some internal assumptions on the symmetry identities or on the absence of non-minimal couplings. So the indications that I gather here actually put these results on more solid grounds because the approximations performed there might actually be very well justified.
I have a question
yes.
about a weak gravity bound.
Okay.
So you looked at the abelian gauge field.
Yes, exactly.
Do you have an expectation how it is for other meta fields, or why did you choose abelian gauge fields? Is it clear that this would give you the strongest bound? For instance.
So the reason why I specifically have looked at this is because of some application that I will explain later in during the talk. But in general, the weak gravity bound for different meta self interactions can lie at different regions in the parameter space. However, an explicit analysis of the weak gravity bound in induced for fermion interactions and also in induced scalar interactions resulted in the fact that the weak gravity bound actually qualitatively agrees in the sense that it always excluded a regime of strong gravity, so more positive cosmological constant and larger value of a Newton coupling, while in the weakly coupled regime, asymptotic safety for the higher order meta couplings was always ensured.
Okay, and I don't know the unit, so I guess that our positive cosmological constant is still somewhere in the wide region there.
Yeah, so yeah, that's actually a very good point. So yes, a positive cosmological constant is still viable. However, these values that I show here are potentially fixed point values. And safe quantum gravity, there is the possibility that one can transition from a negative cosmological constant in the UV to a positive cosmological constant in the infrared by virtue of UIG.
Is there a simple reason why negative cosmological constant is preferred?
Yeah, so if one, so this is sometimes called the effective gravitational strength, and this is how gravity couples back into the meta sector, and this is usually given by g over 1 minus 2 lambda for the gauge independent mode of a graviton, and therefore for negative values of lambda, gravity contributions are just suppressed, and that's why this region here is the weakly coupled regime and is in a sense preferred.
So that roughly also explains that it's almost a kind of a straight line from actually the formula you cited.
Yeah. So of course, this effective gravitational strength might enter in different powers in the beta functions, but it will be some kind of superposition of power laws.
Thank you.
Are there more questions at this point?
Do you want to remind us what the weak gravity bound is in this context?
So it is literally this boundary between the red hatched region where the higher order induced for photon interaction does not have a UV fixed point, and the white region here where it does become, or where it has an interacting asymptotically safe fixed point. So here, so it's just the point where this parabola is shifted such that it barely touches beta equals zero at one single point. And beyond that, this coupling will be UV incomplete because there's no real fixed point. And this boundary was called the weak gravity bound. because it's...
Was that the original motivation? Because it's now formulated in the language of asymptotic safety with a fixed, you're using a fixed point as part of the derivation of the bound. But I'm just curious what the original conjecture was based on, because it didn't come.
So the weak gravity bound is not related to the weak gravity conjecture that one knows from string theory or the swampland program in string theory.
It's my misunderstanding.
So sorry, I didn't make that clear. So that this is, so the weak gravity bound was it's a notation or a phrase that has been introduced in the asymptotic safety community. But of course, the relation to similar phenomena in other approaches might be interesting to investigate.
Okay. That's why I was confused. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, so that was actually a very good point to ask questions. So let's now zoom out a bit again and look at the theory island. And with the indications for the near perturbative nature of a fixed point, I hope that I've convinced that there's some, that I've convinced you that there's some kind of notion of convergence. And therefore, I put a very tentative and very light green check mark on the convergence bit for asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And another issue that is often associated with asymptotically safe quantum gravity is the question of background independence. And if we look around on this theory landscape, then we see that Euclidean dynamical triangulations, which is a lattice approach to quantum gravity and might be related to asymptotic safety, but because of the formulation as a lattice theory, it is per construction background independent. So, let's for now have a look at background independent evidence for asymptotic safety from the lattice. And the idea of Euclidean dynamical triangulations is that one discretizes space-time in terms of building blocks of triangles and then recovers the continuum limit by taking the edge lengths of the triangles to zero. And in this spirit, one replaces the path integral over a metric by a summation over triangles, which is weighted by the Euclidean Einstein-Rege action. And here, in addition, I already introduced a so-called measure term that has been pushed forward in the literature, most recently by Jack Leo. And in the computations, what one usually does is that one fixes kappa 4 to the critical value and then investigates the phase diagram in the beta kappa 2 plane. And the schematic representation of this phase diagram is shown here, where kappa 2 and beta are the two remaining parameters of this action, of this theory, that need to be tuned. And in this parameter, or in this phase space, there is a first order phase transition between the points A and B, and another crossover transition between the points C and D. And now the interesting question, or the most important question, is whether there is a continuum limit, for example, at the critical endpoint of this first order phase transition. And this is the direction that Jack Leo is pushing forward.
Just a question. So kappa 2 and kappa 4 are related to the Newtons and the cosmological constant.
Exactly, right? Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so what is this parameter beta? What's its low energy interpretation?
So I think there's different interpretations of this parameter beta. One of them being that it might be required that the inclusion of a measure term is necessary in order to restore diffeomorphism invariant in the continuum limit, that one therefore has to tune it to a certain value.
If we were in a continuum theory, what would it correspond to?
So I think in this interpretation, there wouldn't be a correspondence. However, there's a different interpretation. And I think it's a priori because and not really clear which one is the correct one that would have to be investigated. If one actually finds a UV fix, a continuum limit, but a different interpretation would be that this measure term here corresponds to some combination of higher curvature operators. So like R squared, R cubed, and so on. And in this interpretation, the coupling beta would correspond to, for example, some higher order curvature couplings. And if some of them would be relevant at the UV fixed point, then this would be the relevant or part of a relevant information. The coefficient of a relevant coupling that one has to tune.
Okay, so in a lot of the literature, people displayed phase diagrams and renormalization group flows just in terms of kappa 2 and kappa 4. So are they now wrong or irrelevant?
So I think this is the original formulation of dynamical triangulations where one had fixed beta to be zero. And in this formulation, one didn't find a continuum phase transition because there was just this one point where one crosses the first order phase transition. And now the idea is that by inclusion of this measure term and by tuning it to the critical value, that one of course has enlarged the parameter space, which might allow for a more rich phase diagram.
Okay, so question, the perturbative non-renormalizability of the theory would suggest that once you introduce one of these additional parameters, dimensionless parameters, there are an infinity of them. How do you know that you're not in that situation?
So I think as far as understood, on the lattice, or on the lattice, this is usually the case that one has to, in a sense, guess the number of relevant directions and which operators are actually relevant at the UV fixed point, and then investigate whether one can find a continuum limit using these number and these type of relevant directions. And then if one doesn't find one, there's of course still the possibility that adding further operators that one has to tune by introducing more relevant directions, one can still reach a continuum limit. And I think in a sense, the relevant or the operators that one has to tune on the lattice correspond to the relevant operators in the functional renormalization group language that have to be fixed by mm-hmm. measurement in a sense in order to reach that fixed point.
The key thing is the hypothesis that there is a fixed point at non-zero values. It's not an asymptotically free theory, but there's a fixed point at finite values of the dimensionless couplings. That's the fundamental assumption.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just trying to understand. So what you would say to a perturbative quantum field theorist or an effective quantum field theorist is you have to go to non-perturbative, meaning large values of some dimensionless couplings, to find a scale invariant behavior that is not otherwise indicated in perturbation theory.
Well, so as I discussed before, the hope would be that the asymptotically safe fixed point does not lie in a very strongly non-perturbative regime, and that potentially one might have chances to also see the fixed point with perturbative methods. But yes, in principle, I agree with you that one would have to go to non-perturbative values and look for a fixed point at non-vanishing values of the couplings.
Great, thank you.
I have a question. So this O is something like the number of four simplices shared by a triangle?
Yes, exactly. So this is the triangle order. So that's That's the number of force implices that are shared by a triangle. And therefore this, I mean, this is the, as far as I understood.
The control is a curvature.
Exactly. So this is then related because it's the triangle order, it's related to the deficit angle, which is a notion of curvature in the lattice. And therefore this might be, this measure term might have an interpretation of higher order curvature operators.
So I have just a question. I mean, is that going to negative beta? I mean, it looks like the continuum limit is at quite negative beta. Is that suppressing curvature, or is that, is it in which way does it go? Do you know spontaneously?
No, that's a good point. Okay. I didn't think about that beta tuning in this respect. That's a very good point. I will have to think about it. Thank you. Okay, so this is the basic idea, and the key question, as I think we discussed, is that is the question whether there is a continuum limit somewhere along this first order phase transition. And in order to address this question, we will use meta degrees of freedom as a probe for dynamical for gravity, in the sense that we study scalar fields on the configurations of Euclidean dynamical triangulations in the so-called quenched approximations, in the quenched approximation, where one solves the equation of motions for the scalar fields on the fluctuating spacetime without taking the back coupling of the scalar fields onto the dynamical triangulations into account. And then then we will extract the binding energy of two scalar fields and the renormalized mass of one scalar field from the one and two particle two-point correlators, and we fit the binding energy to a power law to the renormalized mass of one single scalar field. And in the continuum non-relativistic limit, this relation is given by, or this power is given by 5, which just comes from solving the Schrödinger equation in the gravitational potential. And the result that we obtain on EDT is alpha being 5.0 plus minus 0.6. And here in the plot on the right, I show the main plot where we, on the x-axis, we show the inverse volume, and on the y-axis, the fit parameter alpha for different values for differently coarse lattices. So A is the relative lattice spacing of the dynamical triangulations. And the black line here, and with the data point here, corresponds to the continuum limit. So A going to zero and infinite volume V to infinity limit. And in this limit, this extrapolation from the lattice data provides alpha being 5.0 plus minus 0.6, which means that we find in this setup, we find indications for a classical limit of Newtonian gravity, which is four-dimensional. So it actually corresponds to the continuum four-dimensional non-relativistic limit. And coming back to the main question in dynamical triangulation, whether there is a continuum limit. And of course, one desperately needs this continuum limit in order to be able to do some physics and in order to explain scale invariance and asymptotic safety on the lattice. However, the potential continuum limit lies at an area of very low acceptance rate, for example, for the lattices that we have explored before, the acceptance rate is of the order of 10 to the minus 6. And this makes numerical computations very expensive. Now, the idea is that we would like to adapt rejection-free algorithms that are commonly used in so-called kinetic Monte Carlo simulations, which are applied to study the growth or to simulate the growth of crystals. And the proof of principle of this implementation for the easing model is shown, or the speed up is shown here, where on the x-axis we show the acceptance rate, and on the y-axis I show the speed up, and we see, so this is a log-log plot, and we see that there is in this log-log plot a linear relation between the acceptance rate and the speed up, which means that if the acceptance rate drops by one order of magnitude, the speed up that we gain by using this rejection-free algorithm will also be one order of magnitude. And so this was just the application to the easing model, and we are currently also implementing it on Euclidean dynamical triangulation. And this actually might be a potential game changer, since it might allow us to gain a significant speed up compared to the simulation costs that we have now, and potentially allow us to explore the continuum, to explore this phase, first order phase line further, and investigate whether there is a second order phase transition. So with this brief...
I had one question. Okay. About the results of the scalar field.
Yes.
Which looks like you show that Newton's law holds dynamical triangulation.
It's in the non-relativistic limit.
In the non-relativistic limit. Yes. But and I guess that also that you get five. Well, the power of five is specific to four dimensions.
Yes.
So where in the phase diagram did you do this these simulations? Is it going along the phase transition line? Because the crumpled, because the effective dimension for a branched polymer phase and the crinkled region, I think is like two and infinity. So I'm surprised that you find four dimensions.
Yeah. So it actually is along this phase, along this line, and and indeed from this thinking about the dimensionalities, it's very in a sense surprising that one gets kind of a four-dimensional Newtonian limit out of it.
So it's kind of, as far as I know, it's the first indication that it is four-dimensional, the phase transition line, in some sense.
Yeah, so I think there have been previous indications investigated by Jack and collaborators, uh-huh, that towards this or towards more negative values of beta along this first order phase transition, uh-huh, the lattices become finer and finer, and the baby universes that usually dominate at beta equals to zero, that they shrink. But that one actually gets a four-dimensional classical limit out of it, I think indeed this is the first result.
And have you checked also a bit off the line so that you see that it changes off the phase transition line?
No, we didn't do that. So we only took configurations that are on the line and simulated those. And so the point of using this, or the advantage of using this quenched approximation is that one can just recycle the configurations that one had simulated before, because one just sits the scalar field on top of that. And therefore we...
So it's only a simulation of the scalar field and not of Euclidean dynamical triangulations.
No, it's the other way around. So so we take a pure gravity configuration for Euclidean dynamical triangulations and then let the scalar field evolve on that configuration, but we don't take the backcoupling of the scalar field onto the dynamical triangulation into account. So this is the approximation. Mm-hmm. But in principle, the presence of a scalar field would modify the triangulation, mm-hmm, and this modification is neglected.
Mm-hmm. Is there evidence? Do you get the sign of Newton's law right? that gravity is attractive. In other words, that the energy EB is positive GM to the phi.
Yeah. So that's a very good question. And indeed, that's the second quantity that can be extracted from this power law. And indeed, the coefficient A is positive, so one finds an attractive force between these two scalar fields. Yes.
That's fabulous.
Okay, then I maybe just continue, unless there are additional questions. Okay, so with this brief interlude on Euclidean dynamical triangulation, let's take a step back and let me mention that if indeed we find indications for a continuum limit of Euclidean dynamical triangulations, that this would then also this would then allow to explore asymptotic safety on the lattice, and might allow us to also address stability questions in the entire scenario of asymptotic safety in a concerted fashion between Euclidean dynamical triangulations and the FRG method. So the last point on the to-do list, or on this key challenge list, is that was unitarity, sorry. And in this part, before I go into the results, I want to emphasize that there's currently no conclusive answer to the question whether or not asymptotically safe quantum gravity is unitary or not. And in the recent years, there's a lot of effort into the direction of investigating unitarity in asymptotic safety, and for example, also by Benjamin and Alessia, they're working on this. And instead of focusing on the question whether asymptotically safe quantum gravity can be fundamentally unitary, I present a different way to deal with unitarity in asymptotic safety, and this is via an embedding in, for example, string theory that I investigated in the context of the weak gravity bound and the swarm plant scenario in string theory. And the idea here is that at some UV scale above the Planck scale, the theory is described by string theory, which then admits or goes over into an asymptotically safe scaling regime, which is described by a quantum field theoretic regime dominated by the asymptotically safe fixed point. And then at the Planck scale, so at this K transition at the Planck scale, one departs from the effective asymptotically safe scaling regime towards the standard model. And of course, because it's no longer a fundamental theory in this scenario, the question of unitarity and asymptotic safety is not present, as long as potential poles that might arise lie beyond the string scale. And the advantage of this scenario, in a sense, is that even though we embed or we interpret asymptotic safety as an effective field theory, the predictive power of the asymptotically safe fixed point still remains, because the infrared attractive directions of the fixed point still serve as attractors of the RG flow. And with this excursion to unitarity, let's just take another step back and look at our two islands. And I hope I've convinced you that on the theory island, in the context of asymptotically safe quantum gravity, there's actually quite some evidence for the fixed point and for the stability of the fixed point, which, in my opinion, provides a solid basis, a solid foundation, that now allows us to build a bridge towards the phenomenology island and ask whether the interplay of quantum gravity and matter might put consistency tests or might even predict some fundamental properties of nature, such as its dimensionality, matter content, or symmetries. And before I go into the details, I would like to emphasize that all of the results that I will present are intended to be to provide first steps towards answering these big questions. And of course, there's still a lot of work to do in order to provide more concrete and more solid answers. But so nevertheless, let's start with the question, why do we live in four dimensions? And for this, let's focus on the abelian gauge sector again, where quantum fluctuations of charged metric turn the vacuum into a screening medium, which is indicated by the positive sign of the beta function shown here on a one loop level. And due to this positive sign, the three fixed point is UV repulsive, which means that if we start close from the fixed point, we are driven away from it towards larger energies. If we now include asymptotically safe quantum gravity into the system, this results into an additional contribution to the scale dependence of abelian gauge coupling, which is linear in the gauge coupling. And studies using the functional renormalization group indicate that FG is non-vanishing for any, non-negative for any non-vanishing value of a Newton coupling in four dimensions. And if it is actually positive, so if FG is positive, which we will assume in the following, then this means that FG acts as an effective dimensional reduction. And since it dominates at small values of a gauge coupling, it turns the free fixed point into an infrared repulsive, so a UV attractive direction, rendering the abelian gauge coupling asymptotically free at this in this case. Now, if we go beyond d equals to 4, the scale dependence acquires yet another contribution, which is related to the canonical mass dimension of the gauge coupling. And therefore, in d larger than 4, there's a direct competition between the dimensional term and the gravitational contribution. And now the gravitational contribution has to overcome some finite value in order to induce a UV, in order to induce asymptotic freedom in the gauge coupling. And since the canonical mass dimension, which is the critical value that FG has to overcome, increases towards larger dimensions, also the FG has to increase, which indicates that a UV completion of a abelian gauge coupling shifts to a more strongly coupled regime of gravity, since we have to increase G further and further. Now, we have seen before that a strongly coupled regime for gravity is problematic due to the so-called weak gravity bound that I have explained. And we can therefore now explore the combination of the condition that FG is sufficiently large in order to induce asymptotic freedom in the gauge coupling while still remaining in the weak gravity regime, such that the high order induced gauge for photon interaction still has a UV fixed point. And the result, the main result that I obtained is shown here, where on the X and Y axis, again, we show lambda and g, which are related to the Newton to the cosmological constant and the Newton coupling. And this red hatched region is the same region that we have seen before, where the higher order coupling W2 does not have a UV fixed point, while the green region indicates the region where the abelian gauge coupling becomes asymptotically free. And we see that in four dimensions, there's still a very large region in the gravitational parameter space where a UV completion of the entire gravity matter or of the entire matter system is possible, which we explored in this truncation. So, and if we shift to d equals to 6, then the situation is vastly different, since the entire region where a UV completion of the abelian gauge coupling is possible has shifted into the region where W2 doesn't have a fixed point anymore. And therefore, in D equals to 6, we don't find any parameter region where a UV completion of the abelian gauge sector is possible within asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And so in summary, for asymptotically safe gravity metamodels, D equals to 4 and also D equals to 5, which I didn't talk about explicitly, appear to be the only dimensions that allow to accommodate a UV-complete abelian gauge sector within our approximations. And with this, in my opinion, very fascinating result, let's move on to the next big question, namely, why is there more than one generation of fermions? And to address this question, I investigated the gauge gravity fermion interplay and studied the fate of chirosymmetry at the interacting fixed point for the abelian gauge coupling, which is induced by asymptotically safe quantum gravity. And in analogy to QCD, I observed that a too large value of the abelian gauge of the gauge coupling induces divergences in chirally symmetric four fermion interactions, which in the language that we have introduced, or that I have introduced until now, means that for large values of abelian gauge coupling, the induced chirally symmetric four fermion interactions do not have a real fixed point. And the result is shown here, where on the x and y axis, again, we show the value of a Newton coupling and the cosmological constant, so the dimensionless version of those. And here, let's focus on nf equals to 2. And then this gray region here indicates the region where chirally symmetric four fermion interactions do not have a fixed point, such that if we would like to have chirosymmetry, which is a requirement for light fermions in the infrared, then the gravitational fixed point has to lie in this white regime. And this pink line, together with the different markers, indicate the asymptotically safe fixed point as a function of the fermion number. And we see that for nf equals to 2, indeed the would-be fixed point lies in a region where we don't find a fixed point in the chirally symmetric subspace. However, for nf equals to 3, the fixed point has moved, and also the boundary between intact and broken chirosymmetry has shifted, such that we need at least 3 fermions to have a chirally symmetric asymptotically safe fixed point. And therefore, the conclusion is that the interplay of quantum gravity with gauge fields and fermions might give rise to a lower bound on the number of fermions, since for nf equals to 2, for example, there is just no fixed point in the chirally symmetric theory space.
A question?
Yes.
There's an old conjecture that there's a relationship between the neutrino mass differences and the cosmological constant. Could you derive that from your setup here?
I've never thought about that. So from the top of my head, I don't have an answer to that question.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sounds tantalizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you. I will think about it. Thank you. Okay. And so let me now continue with the last question that I want to address before I summarize. And this relates to whether Lorentz invariance is a fundamental symmetry. And to investigate this scenario, I study the interplay, the impact of a preferred frame on the meta sector. And for this, we approximate the dynamics of a gravity meta system by the diffeomorphism in the Lorentz invariant part, namely the action-Hilbert action, and just a Lorentz invariant standard kinetic term for a well-built engaged field. Then we obtain access to the foliation structure by performing a 3+1 decomposition of the metric into a spatial metric and a time-like vector. And we use this access to the foliation structure in order to single out the preferred frame, which is encoded in this action and parameterized by the gravitational lift couplings AI. And one example of these operators would be, for example, the extrinsic curvature squared or the acceleration vector squared. And the main goal of the study is to investigate the effect of this preferred frame onto the meta sector by studying the scale dependence of the Lorentz invariance breaking meta coupling zeta, gauge coupling zeta. And one possible signature that one could observe or constrain by the presence of such kind of Lorentz invariance violating meta coupling would be vacuum birefringence that a photon would, or an abelian gauge field would feature. And the main result of this analysis of the impact of a preferred frame on the meta sector is that that zeta equals to zero is not a fixed point of a scale dependence of zeta. And this means that the fixed point value is non-vanishing in the presence of a preferred frame. And as indicated here in this plot, this means that even if we set zeta equals to zero at some initial scale, that the RG flow will automatically regenerate a finite value of zeta. And interestingly, the order of magnitude of the value which is regenerated is of the same order of magnitude as the value of the gravitational lift couplings. And now the interplay of gravity and matter now relates the size of the Lorentz invariance violating couplings in the gravity sector and in the meta sector. And this allows to combine or to use this interplay in order to derive strong indirect bounds on Lorentz invariance violations in gravity if one could measure or if one could constrain Lorentz invariance violations in the meta sector. And this is exemplified here in this plot where the black hatched regions indicate the exclusion by using gravitational waves and cosmology, and the different shades of red indicate the regions where that would be excluded from the viable lift parameter space if zeta was constrained to be smaller than, for example, 10 to the minus 40. And therefore, in summary, the interplay of quantum gravity and matter might pose strong indirect constraints on Lorentz invariance violations in the gravitational sector. And with this, let me briefly summarize my talk. So I have identified the two key challenges of quantum gravity, namely one that we would like to understand the phenomenology of quantum gravity and to understand whether we can predict or constrain certain properties that happen or that we can observe at low energies. And in order to do so, we need to build a bridge from the theory island to the Fino island, which requires a strong foundation on the theoretical understanding of quantum gravity. And I hope that I've convinced you that in asymptotically safe quantum gravity, there are indications that actually we have a rather strong foundation that allows us to build the bridge and transition to the Fino island and answer or seek answers to intriguing questions like, why do we live in four dimensions? Why is there so many fermions around us? And what are the fundamental symmetries of our universe? And as an outlook, of course, in the future, I would like to continue in investigating this interplay of theory and phenomenology in quantum gravity. And specifically on the theory side, the results in dynamical triangulations, also regarding the speed up that we might expect from the rejection-free algorithm might allow us to investigate a potential continuum limit in dynamical triangulations in the future. And what one can then, or independently, also go over to the study of unquenched metafields, so to actually take the back coupling of a metafield on the triangulations into account and investigate the approximation that I've described earlier in more detail and without this additional approximation. And then ultimately, if one finds further indications for a continuum limit, it would be intriguing to compare certain qualitative results between dynamical triangulations and VFRG. And of course, on the asymptotic safety side, there's also still a lot of very interesting and fascinating questions related to, for example, the vector sector, where I would like to investigate convergence in a similar way that I've investigated in the fermionic sector. And in the vector sector, there's indications, or there might be the possibility that for a large value of the number of vector fields, there could potentially be a perturbative limit that might be that might allow us to address a perturbative regime of the asymptotically safe fixed point using perturbative methods as well. And in the spirit that I've investigated non-minimal fermionic interactions, it would be very interesting to investigate non-minimal vector interactions as well, because on the one hand, they help us to build an even stronger foundation here. But on the other hand, they also have, or might have, phenomenological implications, since in general, or in principle, non-minimal couplings lead to or break the equivalence principle and therefore lead to deviations from geodesic motions of particles. And therefore one could think about potential potential signals, for example, in a shift of polarization, which would be spin dependent, or in a different speed of propagation for particles with different spins. And therefore one could use this bridge that we have built in a two-way, in both ways, and understand the interplay of a non-minimal coupling from on the theory side and its impact on the phenomenology, Fino Island. And with this, I'm done, and I thank you very much for your attention.
Right, thank you, Mark, very much for your presentation. We have a little time for some more questions. Is there anyone from the postdoc in the audience who have questions, or students maybe first? Someone?
Hi, Mark.
Ah, hi.
Hi. Okay.
So about your point of exploring asymptotic safety across different approaches, I wonder if you considered the role of superposition of causal structures with asymptotic safety.
So are you referring to a potential Lorentzian signature or to exploring asymptotic safety in a Lorentzian setting?
There's this vague thought that if there's a fluctuation of causal structure, there should be a bound. For example, if I superpose a space-like separation with time-like separation. And so suppose I start with a background space-time that's basically space-like, and I add a little bit of fluctuation of causal structure. That's like, say, 0.9 space-like separation superposed with 0.1 time-like separation. But then in this case, what is a large causal structure fluctuation? It should be something like 0.5 and 0.5 for these causal structures. So you can't get bigger. if you have equal superposition, roughly speaking, that's the largest fluctuation in causal structure you can have. That's like a fixed point, in a sense. I wonder if people studied this kind of idea.
Not that I'm aware of. It sounds very interesting, but I'm not aware of any work that studies this idea in the context of asymptotically safe quantum gravity.
It would be interesting to explore, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Maybe Bianca in Rome?
Thanks, Mark, for this talk. I have a question about truncations. So it seems that the results involving matter, mostly they are done in the G lambda truncation. Is that correct? So can you say to which degree is that justified, because there seem to be more relevant couplings, and say in EDT, supposedly it's very important to have another coupling. So to which degree do you expect that these results will be stable if you add other couplings like higher derivative?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting and very important question. And actually, the study of a non-minimal coupling that I have presented is one of such couplings that are canonically irrelevant. And therefore, the impact, because it has a canonical mass dimension of -2, and therefore, the investigating the impact of a non-minimal coupling on the system of minimally coupled gravity actually is some indication for the question whether the truncations do converge or not. But I agree that in these meta computations, there's still the necessity to go beyond Einstein-Hilbert and to investigate higher order truncations. However, one additional point that I would like to make, if I can actually come back to the slide, is that due to the evaluation of the correlation functions in a momentum-dependent way, one is actually capable of extracting more momentum dependence than just the Einstein-Hilbert bit out of it. So this is a way that you start with the Einstein-Hilbert approximation, but then you extract some portion of a momentum dependence which is generated by the RG flow. And this generation of higher order momentum dependencies might be thought of due to the presence of higher order couplings. And therefore, by investigating these gravity matter systems in a momentum dependent way, in my opinion, already is taking into account some of these higher order momentum dependencies. But of course, it would be very interesting to include them explicitly, like we did here with this non-minimal fermion coupling, and confirm that the fixed point persists and that the impact of the new coupling that one included actually is rather small.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, we have other questions. Well, if that's not the case, then I think we can thank Mark again.